hanging out with us, and we really appreciate it if you go check us out. Where, Don?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook as well, so feel free to post up there. I just posted a big picture up there. Do you see it, Don?
Yeah, big pike.
Yeah, that was...
Where'd you get that one?
Lake of the Woods.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's over... It was like 40... 43 or something.
Yeah, stretching it, but...
That was the one that ate the wall. The arms auger aren't that long. I had that auger. A pike is 43 inches? That was it.
No, your arms aren't that long.
No, my arms aren't that. I can't stretch the fish that far. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You're such a help, Don.
I know.
You see, it didn't have whiskers, so you didn't really recognize what it was at first.
I watched a video the other day of a young gal that
coming
was
coming up going, meow.
She literally was down in a hole. These young gals that they got on Facebook. I don't know why it came up on my feed. And she literally puts her arm all the way through the gills, up through the mouth. And when they bring it out.
Catfish.
It's a catfish.
Noodling.
Yeah. But she's doing it with her whole arm.
I was going to say, if you do that with a pike, your arm will be shredded.
No,
the gill rakers are just off the charts. I mean,
I've been there.
It's not good.
I know.
But I think I told you about that story. I had a sauger and the sun was shining in my back, and all of a sudden from underneath the boat comes this monster pike and just attacked it. Well, I look and here's this walleye it was a sauger that was half in the bag, shall we say. It was not all there on the surface, and it was my fish, but I still had the big pike on my line.
Oh.
It hit it so hard that it knocked the walleye off. It was in its mouth. It came loose.
And it caught him.
And the hook went right into the corner of the mouth of the pike.
Yeah.
And it was in a light wire hook, too. It was in a light slow death hook.
Yep.
That's lucky.
That's lucky. I was just thinking about that. I'm tying up some for my next trip. And
that's...
I go, if you catch a pike on this, I wonder if you get it in.
It was something.
It's like a piece of wire.
Make sure you put on a little prop blade, though.
Yep.
That really helps. The reason is if you go slower than... it takes about a mile an hour. And trust me, I played with it a lot when I won the tournament on the Wahi. It took me days and days to really perfect the speed. It's about 1 to 1. 1 to 1 is about the best.
Okay.
And bottom bouncer is the best because it keeps it up off the bottom. But doggone it, I'll tell you what, if you went slower than that, it didn't work. And one of the things we did is slowed it down and the water got cloudy and I added a little prop blade, a Mac blade, because it is... lightweight, but then you can also do those little tiny, you know, the little prop blades,
yep.
The little ones, the metal ones, they work pretty good, but I prefer the Mac blade because you've got different types.
They're almost like a paper.
Yeah, they are. It's like a fiber material.
Yeah.
And the color variances are...
all over the place.
Yeah,
you can get any color you want.
Black and orange is one of the best, kind of a weird black and orange pattern.
It's probably the one I didn't get.
Well, that's why I said that.
I know. You probably saw them in my box.
That's the way it works for fishermen, though.
You know what I mean?
Remember, they catch fishermen, not fish.
You know what cracks me up is you're up in a camp, and we've done a lot of fishing, you way more than I have probably, but there'll be these old guys come up. I mean, the only thing they know is a Lindy Little Joe with a red and white little spinner on it. And they go out and they come back and they've got a stringer full. It's like.
It happens.
Yep.
But I will say, though, that one of the biggest things to.
You notice I said stringer full?
Yeah, I heard you. Yeah. Dangling over the side. Yes. They're all dead, stiff as a board.
Yep.
Yeah. But I will say that one of the biggest things is not getting stuck. The last trip up, I was running all small stuff, right? And real small spinners. And I said, well, you know what? Let's change it up for fun. And I put the real big Mac blade on it, and it wobbled the slow death because it was short enough to create a movement that was off the charts. Lit them up.
Really?
Totally different movement.
Yeah, I've got several sizes of the prop ones.
Yeah, but the Mac really gives it kind of that, and that, trust me, they're not a sponsor by any means. I just was amazed at how well changing that up works.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm tying up a bunch of them now, so.
Yeah, fluorocarbon.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with fluorocarbon, you know, I always talk about it, sinks.
It sinks.
But I'm only running a 20, maybe a 28-inch lead, so
it's not a big deal. Have you ever put a float on it?
Not on that, no.
No?
It gets too big. I know they make them. that you can put floats on. I like it just about.
I've got the real small, spinner. Like missile floats. They're real narrow. They're not bulky.
No, I like to have the spinners closer to the crawler.
Okay.
As an attractant.
Okay.
And then really making sure that you adjust that crawler so that it kind of comes down and around the curve of the hook.
Right.
That's going to give it the rotation.
The roll.
At the minimum speeds. Mm-hmm. If it does a flat spin on this,
yep.
Instead of the roll, the flat just rotation doesn't do it. It's got to have
the wop, wop, wop.
Yep. Big difference. Big difference. All right. So getting the story before we got sidetracked. It's fun to talk fishing.
Yeah.
I don't know. What can you say? An annual survey just came out indicating that there is a decline in waterfowl populations across North America. Take a look at what the scenarios are. This spring, the American and Canadian federal biologists flew transects, which is trying to dissecting different areas throughout North Central U.S., Alaska, and Canada to record waterfowl distribution and abundance. In all, the numbers reported in the survey are based on the data they collected, but they extrapolated it to 2 million square miles of flyways and breeding grounds. So in other words, they measured a small area and then used that as a basis for what they feel would be the appropriate incorporation of the rest of North America. So it's a scientific methodology. Overall, duck and goose populations are down, but doesn't necessarily mean your waterfowl season is shot. The survey shows an interesting spread, I guess, is the way to look at it. If you look at Alaska and Yukon, numbers are down 48%.
Which is in total?
In total, yep. Below the long-term average, yep. If you look at Saskatchewan and northern Manitoba, they're down about 8%. The eastern Dakotas, they're up 12%. And Montana and the western Dakotas, 23% up.
So the Midwest should be in pretty fair shape.
As long as you get water.
Central flyway.
As long as you get water. In terms of mallards and northern pintails, they took the biggest hits, 23% and 43% below their long-term averages, respectively. Our pintails are at a 24% population increase from 2022.
Wow.
So demonstrating that the time population rebounds require and the necessity of yearly monitoring. You really have to look at it every year in order to get an idea of what's going on. Big issues, drought in the Prairie Pothole region. An important metric is the total pond estimates, which reflects how wet the Prairie Pothole region of Dakotas and Canada is. This year, the estimates 5 million ponds, which is 9% lower than in 2022, 5% lower than the long-term average. And we're on at 9 or 10 of there being some degree of drought across the prairie landscape. So year 9 or 10, drought. So impacts on hunting, seasonal regulations based on the data from the annual survey informs us this year that another component will be regulation and setting age class data obtained from hunters from the prior season. So all in all, I don't know.
It's going to fluctuate no matter what. So
yep, conservation is a long, it's a
long-term
program. It's not a short-term deal. Harvest quotas might be based on survey numbers, but the management's the game of years and decades. And I think we've seen that a lot. And I think we have to be careful of the knee-jerk reactions that oftentimes happen. Don, you've seen it. You look at regulations, and people cry. It's like, how come this or how come that? Well, I think the important thing is, too, in any scenario, is to look at what is going on in a global perspective and then drill down to your specific areas and really get an idea of what's happening. So, well, tell you what, we are going to be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about some people are really worried about fishing and hunting on the East Coast with some regulations that are leaning towards the green side of things.
Hang tight.
We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Don?
Yeah.
You know, it's always one of those... The conversation, it's always fun to talk fishing, and we kind of ramble.
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes it has a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
You know.
But I spare everybody. I spare the yes. rambling.
Well, until we get to deer hunting.
Yeah.
Or pheasant hunting. We haven't talked pheasant hunting this year. We need to do that. We need to find out what's going on in South Dakota.
Yeah.
Next show.
Yeah. I did see some indicators. Of course, we know how they count.
They have a Creel survey.
Mail carriers.
Yeah, well, they count 1 mile.
Mm-hmm. That they do. I've looked at this story in what I do with Charo and dealing with customers out on the East Coast a lot in the conversations with them. And this is becoming a major, major point of contention, to say the least. Experts are fearing the American fishing industry and boating are at risk as the current administration prioritizes climate and green energy. The proposed government regulations have the potential to put an end to the American fishing industry, experts predict. And again, this is at this point, it's on the coastal area on the East Coast. The administration's prioritized green energy and the expanse of endangered whales and the U.S. fishing industry with regulations that limit both commercial fishing and recreational boating. The Vessel Strike Reduction Rule is a new rule proposed by the administration Commerce Department in a partnership with the NOAA, or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that would limit the speed of all motorboats over 35 feet from Florida to Massachusetts to 11.5 miles an hour. For up to 7 months of the year, the rule is marketed as a way to protect the endangered right whale, but fishing experts and anglers say the move would have far-reaching implications for their industry. One of the largest producers of trader and seafood, frozen seafood, on the East Coast said that the complexities behind fishing that require anglers to know where they can go and what they're allowed to do in that area, it's a difficult thing. It's funny because we joke you need a new law degree to go fishing, but that's actually the level of regulation that commercial fishermen are held to. Regulations have not stopped, and they've gotten a multitude of other regulations on top of regulations. I was out fishing out on the East Coast earlier this year with one of the customers. They basically want to put offshore wind on most of the areas in federal waters where we fish. Okay. Instead of allowing the domestic industry to grow, offshore wind, which I'll just say it's the biggest threat to the commercial fishing industry in the United States that exists today and is being pumped up and pushed out on steroids by the administration in a ready, shoot, aim policy that's not only taking commercial fishermen into account, it's not taking commercial fishermen into account, but the ocean itself and all the denizens of the ocean. So really, Don, what's going on here? Is the regulations to try and stop a whale from being injured. The problem is that we're seeing a lot more whales, and you've seen the reports, we're talking about it off air, where there's whales coming up that aren't from strikes, but it's from their beaching because of a lot of the frequencies that are being pulled off of and the electronics, the electrical cabling that's going underneath the water from those
wind farms.
Recently, the Maine lobsterman won a federal court ruling after it sued the National Marine Fisheries Service over a rule that said that it was aimed at protecting the right whale, but lobstermen argued that it would simply put family-owned businesses out of business. They targeted, federal rules targeted recreational fishing and boating, and not, it was not in a good way either.
Is this targeted at commercial fishermen only or everybody in a boat?
Yeah, everybody in a boat.
Wow.
Yeah. They worry the conservation funding will be depleted as a result of the industry being stalled out. It's crazy, Don. It's intense and nobody cares because the government is just going to do what the wind developers are told to do. The offshore wind developers, many of them are owned by foreign governments. So it's foreign governments sometimes that are telling our current administration what to do to the detriment of the U.S. fishing groups and the fishermen.
Well, the whole industry, the boating industry.
Exactly right. And the rapid expansion of offshore wind, whatever the consequence, has been the greatest threat to commercial fishing, particularly on the East Coast. And if everything goes in that they want to go in, you'll be buying all your seafood from China in 20 years. I can tell you that because we're not going to operate a wind farm, and offshore wind has the potential to completely annihilate everything, essentially. And what I find that follows into it is recreational boating at that side of the fence as well also will be eliminated if the 11-mile-an-hour rule is in place. Is that not crazy?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole lot more to the story, but it sure on the surface seems quite far-fetched.
Let's jump into a fun story that I think is really kind of cool. New Hunter Access Program was launched in South Dakota. Kind of neat deal. Yeah. Public Access to Habitat, or the PATH program. It's a partnership driven to boost access to areas and new upland habitat and for areas that are enrolled in the long-term conservation programs across South Dakota. $250,000 commitment from digital mapping company Onyx and the South Dakota Department of Tourism is providing initial funding for the program. The goal is to create new public access to 10,000 acres of quality habitat. Long story short, Pheasants Forever is working with these guys. I'd read the article and it's pretty amazing. The goal is launch is going to happen September 1st. Landowners have an opportunity to enroll eligible acres before the start of the hunting season, pheasant hunting, which opens October 21st. But
is that only for upland game or is it for the deer season?
It's going to be basically areas that are open to public access.
Public hunting. Okay.
So, really cool story. We'll have some more on that as the season goes along here. But thanks for joining us, everybody. Appreciate it. Ava, Don, always good to hang out with you guys. Thanks for joining us. Next week will be fun. I hope everybody has a fantastic Labor Day weekend. Should be good. Have a good one. See you. Bye.